Text 30. Dehi nityam avanyoyam, dehi sarvasya bharato, tasmat sarvani bhutani, natvam shochitam ahasi. O descendant of Bharat, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore you need not grieve for any living being. Purport. The Lord now concludes the chapter of instruction on the immutable spirit soul. In describing the immortal soul in various ways, Lord Krishna establishes that the soul is immortal and the body is temporary. Therefore, Arjuna, as a Kshatriya, should not abandon his duty out of fear that his grandfather and teacher, Bhishma and Drona, will die in the battle. On the authority of Sri Krishna, one has to believe that there is a soul different from the material body. Not that there is no such thing as a soul, or that living symptoms develop at a certain stage of material maturity resulting from the interaction of chemicals. Though the soul is immortal, violence is not encouraged, but at the time of war it is not discouraged when there is actual need for it. That need must be justified in terms of the sanction of the Lord, and not capriciously. Text 31. Svadharmam apichariksya navikam vitumarhasi dharmyadhi yudhache onyat chaptayasya navidyate. Considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles, and so there is no need for hesitation. Purport. Out of the four orders of social administration, the second order, for the matter of good administration, is called Kshatriya. Chat means hurt. One who gives protection from harm is called Kshatriya. Trayate, to give protection. The Kshatriyas are trained for killing in the forest. A Kshatriya would go into the forest and challenge a tiger face to face and fight with the tiger with his sword. When the tiger was killed, it would be offered the royal order of cremation. This system has been followed even up to the present day by the Kshatriya kings of Jaipur state. The Kshatriyas are specially trained for challenging and killing, because religious violence is sometimes a necessary factor. Therefore, Kshatriyas are never meant for accepting directly the order of sannyas or renunciation. Non-violence in politics may be a diplomacy, but it is never a factor or a principle. In the religious law books it is stated, Ahavesho mito nyonyam jagang sando mahichita yudhamana padam shakya swagam yanta paranmukha yagyeshu pasavo brahman hanyante satatam vijaye sanskrita akila mantraischa depi swagam avapnuvan. In the battlefield, a king or Kshatriya, while fighting another king envious of him, is eligible for achieving heavenly planets after death, as the Brahmins also attain the heavenly planets by sacrificing animals in the sacrificial fire. Therefore, killing on the battlefield on religious principles and killing animals in the sacrificial fire are not at all considered to be acts of violence, because everyone is benefited by the religious principles involved. The animal sacrificed gets a human life immediately, without undergoing the gradual evolutionary process from one form to another. And the Kshatriyas killed on the battlefield also attain the heavenly planets, as do the Brahmins who attain them by offering sacrifice. There are two kinds of Svadharmas, specific duties. As long as one is not liberated, one has to perform the duties of his particular body in accordance with religious principles in order to achieve liberation. When one is liberated, one's Svadharma, specific duty, becomes spiritual and is not in the material bodily concept. In the bodily conception of life, there are specific duties for the Brahmins and Kshatriyas respectively, and such duties are unavoidable. Svadharma is ordained by the Lord, and this will be clarified in the fourth chapter. On the bodily plane, Svadharma is called Varnashram Dharma, or man's stepping stone for spiritual understanding. Human civilization begins from the stage of Varnashram Dharma, or specific duties in terms of the specific modes of nature of the body obtained. discharging one's specific duty in any field of action in accordance with the orders of higher authorities, serves to elevate one to a higher status of life. Text 32. Yadrichaya chopapannam swagadvadam apavritam sukinak shatriyapata labande yudhamidrisham. O Partha, happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. Purport. As the supreme teacher of the world, Lord Krishna condemns the attitude of Arjuna, who said, "I do not find any good in this fighting. It will cause perpetual habitation in hell." Such statements by Arjuna were due to ignorance only. He wanted to become non-violent in the discharge of his specific duty. For a Kshatriya to be on the battlefield and to become non-violent is the philosophy of fools. In the Parashara Smriti, or religious codes made by Parashara, the great sage and father of Vyasadeva, it is stated, Kshatriyo hi prajarakshan shastrapani padandayan nirjitya padasanyadi jitim dharne napalihit. The Kshatriya's duty is to protect the citizens from all kinds of difficulties, and for that reason he has to apply violence in suitable cases for law and order. Therefore, he has to conquer the soldiers of inimical kings, and thus, with religious principles, he should rule over the world. Considering all aspects, Arjuna had no reason to refrain from fighting. If he should conquer his enemies, he would enjoy the kingdom, and if he should die in the battle, he would be elevated to the heavenly planets, whose doors were wide open to him. Fighting would be for his benefit in either case. Text 33. Ata chetam imam dharmyam sangraham nakarishyasi tatasva dharmam kirtim cha hitva papam vapsyasi. If, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and thus lose your reputation as a fighter. Purport. Arjuna was a famous fighter, and he attained fame by fighting many great demigods, including even Lord Shiva. After fighting and defeating Lord Shiva in the dress of a hunter, Arjuna pleased the Lord and received as a reward a weapon called Pashupata Astra. Everyone knew that he was a great warrior. Even Dronacharya gave him benedictions and awarded him the special weapon by which he could kill even his teacher. So Arjuna was credited with so many military certificates from many authorities, including his seminal father Indra, the heavenly king. But if he abandoned the battle, not only would he neglect his specific duty as a Kshatriya, but he would lose all his fame and good name and thus prepare his royal road to hell. In other words, he would go to hell not by fighting, but by withdrawing from battle. Text 34. Akirtin chapi bhutani katiyashyanti devyam sambhavitasya chakirti madanadati richyate. People will always speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. Purport. Both as a friend and philosopher to Arjuna, Lord Krishna now gives his final judgment regarding Arjuna's refusal to fight. The Lord says, Arjuna, if you leave the battlefield before the battle even begins, people will call you a coward. And if you think that people may call you bad names, but that you will save your life by fleeing the battlefield, then my advice is that you do better to die in the battle. For a respectable man like you, ill fame is worse than death. So you should not flee for fear of your life. Better to die in the battle. That will save you from the ill fame of misusing my friendship and from losing your prestige in society. So the final judgment of the Lord was for Arjuna to die in the battle and not withdraw. Text 35. Bayad vranat upadatam mangsyante tam maharatha yesham chattam bahumato bhutvaya sasi laghavam. The great generals who have highly esteemed your name and fame will think that you have left the battlefield out of fear only, and thus they will consider you insignificant. Purport. Lord Krishna continued to give his verdict to Arjuna. Do not think that the great generals like Duryodhana, Karna, and other contemporaries will think that you have left the battlefield out of compassion for your brothers and grandfather. They will think that you have left out of fear for your life, and thus their high estimation of your personality will go to hell. Text 36. Navachavarangshabahun vadishyanti tavahita nindantastava samartyam tatodukkaparangmukhim. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? Purport. Lord Krishna was astonished in the beginning at Arjuna's uncalled for plea for compassion, and he described his compassion as befitting the non-Aryans. Now, in so many words, he has proved his statements against Arjuna's so-called compassion. Text 37. Hatova prapsasi svargam jitvava mokshase mahim antasmadutishta konteya yudhaya kratanishtaya. O son of Kunti, either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. Purport. Even though there was no certainty of victory for Arjuna's side, he still had to fight. For, even being killed there, he could be elevated into the heavenly planets. Text 38. Sukadukke samekritnva labha labho jaya jayo dato yudhnaya yudhyasva naivam papnavapsasi. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by so doing, you shall never incur sin. Purport. Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting, because Krishna desires the battle. There is no consideration of happiness or distress, profit or gain, victory or defeat, in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna is transcendental consciousness, so there is no reaction to material activities. He who acts for his own sense gratification, either in goodness or in passion, is subject to the reaction, good or bad. But he who has completely surrendered himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness is no longer obliged to anyone, nor is he a debtor to anyone, as one is in the ordinary course of activities. It is said, Devashi Bhutatanam Patrinam Nakinkaro Nayangrini Charajan Sarvatmanayak Shalanang Sharanyam Kato Mukundam Pariritikartam. Anyone who has completely surrendered unto Krishna, Mukunda, giving up all other duties, is no longer a debtor, nor is he obliged to anyone. Not the demigods, or the sages, or the people in general, or kinsmen, or humanity, or forefathers. Bhagavatam 11.5.41. That is the indirect hint given by Krishna to Arjuna in this verse, and the matter will be more clearly explained in the following verses. Text 39. Eshate bihita sankhihi buddhi yoge timangshinu buddhya yukto yayapata karma bandhang pahasisi. Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Purport. According to the Nirukti, or the Vedic dictionary, Sankhya means that which describes things in detail, and Sankhya refers to that philosophy which describes the real nature of the soul. And yoga involves controlling the senses. Arjuna's proposal not to fight was based on sense gratification. Forgetting his prime duty, he wanted to cease fighting, because he thought that by not killing his relatives and kinsmen, he would be happier than by enjoying the kingdom after conquering his cousins and brothers, the sons of Dhritarashtra. In both ways, the basic principles were for sense gratification. Happiness derived from conquering them, and happiness derived by seeing kinsmen alive, are both on the basis of personal sense gratification, even at a sacrifice of wisdom and duty. Krishna, therefore, wanted to explain to Arjuna that by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper. And Krishna explained that all individual persons, including the Lord himself, are eternal individuals. They were individuals in the past, they are individuals in the present, and they will continue to remain individuals in the future, because all of us are individual souls eternally. We simply change our bodily dress in different manners, but actually we keep our individuality even after liberation from the bondage of material dress. An analytical study of the soul and the body has been very graphically explained by Lord Krishna. And this descriptive knowledge of the soul and the body from different angles of vision has been described here as Sankhya in terms of the Nirukti dictionary. This Sankhya has nothing to do with Sankhya philosophy of the atheist Kapila. Long before the impostor Kapila's Sankhya, the Sankhya philosophy was expounded in the Srimad Bhagavatam by the true Lord Kapila, the incarnation of Lord Krishna, who explained it to his mother, Devahuti. It is clearly explained by him that the Purusha, or the Supreme Lord, is active, and that he creates by looking over the Prakriti. This is accepted in the Vedas and in the Gita. The description in the Vedas indicates that the Lord glanced over the Prakriti, or nature, and impregnated it with atomic individual souls. All these individuals are working in the material world for sense gratification, and under the spell of material energy, they are thinking of being enjoyers. This mentality is dragged to the last point of liberation when the living entity wants to become one with the Lord. This is the last snare of Maya, or sense gratificatory illusion, and it is only after many, many births of such sense gratificatory activities that a great soul surrenders unto Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, thereby fulfilling the search after the ultimate truth. Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as his spiritual master by surrendering himself unto him. Shishyastehaṁ śādhimāṁ tvāṁ prapannaṁ. Consequently, Krishna will now tell Arjuna about the working process in Buddhi Yoga, or Karma Yoga, or in other words, the practice of devotional service only for the sense gratification of the Lord. This Buddhi Yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, who is sitting as Paramatma in everyone's heart. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service to the Lord, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to this state of Buddhi Yoga by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only to those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love does he award the pure knowledge of devotion in love. In that way, the devotee can reach him easily in the ever-blissful kingdom of God. Thus, the Buddhi Yoga mentioned in this verse is the devotional service of the Lord, and the word Sankhya mentioned herein has nothing to do with the atheistic Sankhya Yoga enunciated by the impostor Kapila. One should not, therefore, misunderstand that the Sankhya Yoga mentioned herein has any connection with the atheistic Sankhya. Nor did that philosophy have any influence during that time, nor would Lord Krishna care to mention such godless philosophical speculations. Real Sankhya philosophy is described by Lord Kapila in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but even that Sankhya has nothing to do with the current topics. Here, Sankhya means analytical description of the body and the soul. Lord Krishna made an analytical description of the soul just to bring Arjuna to the point of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, Lord Krishna's Sankhya and Lord Kapila's Sankhya, as described in the Bhagavatam, are one and the same. They are all Bhakti Yoga. Lord Krishna said, therefore, that only the less intelligent class of men make a distinction between Sankhya Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Sankhya Yoga Pratagnpala Bhavadandi Napandita. Of course, atheistic Sankhya Yoga has nothing to do with Bhakti Yoga, yet the unintelligent claim that the atheistic Sankhya Yoga is referred to in the Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore understand that Buddhi Yoga means to work in Krishna consciousness, in the full bliss and knowledge of devotional service. One who works for the satisfaction of the Lord only, however difficult such work may be, is working under the principles of Buddhi Yoga and finds himself always in transcendental bliss. By such transcendental engagement, one achieves all transcendental understanding automatically by the grace of the Lord, and thus his liberation is complete in itself, without his making extraneous endeavors to acquire knowledge. There is much difference between work in Krishna consciousness and work for fruitive results, especially in the matter of sense gratification for achieving results in terms of family or material happiness. Buddhi Yoga is therefore the transcendental quality of the work that we perform. Text 40.
Neha bikrama nashosti vatyavayo navidyate sopamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat.
In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Purport. Activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at a loss, even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness bears permanent results, so that the next beginning is from the point of 2%, whereas in material activity, without 100% success, there is no profit. Ajamayo performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. There is a nice verse in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.17.
Jyakva sadharmam chadanam bhujam hare bhajanna pakpo tapatetato yadi yatrakva bhandrama bhudamushyakim govata apto bhajatam sadharmataha.
If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? Or, as the Christians say, what profiteth a man if he gain the whole world, yet suffers the loss of his eternal soul? Material activities and their results end with the body, but work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after the loss of the body. At least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being, either in the family of a great cultured Brahmin, or in a rich aristocratic family that will give one a further chance for elevation. That is the unique quality of work done in Krishna consciousness. Text 41.
Vyavasayatmaka buddhi ekeha kurunandana bahushakayanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam.
Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called vyavasayatmaka intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22.62, states,
Ashradha shabde vishras kohe sudridhanishtroy Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy.
Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. when one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudevaksavamiti samahatma sudurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudev, or Krishna, is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student, and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanath Chakrapati Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows.
Yasya prasadan bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati kutopi, dhyayan stuvanstasya yashastri sandhyam, vande guroshi jadanaravindam.
By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the supreme personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day, and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically, when there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. Text 42-43.
Yamimam buspitam vacham pravadanja vipaschitaha veravarata partha nanyarasti divadinaha. Kamatmana sokaparaha janma karma palapradam kriya vishesh bahulam bhogaisya yakatimpati.
Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Purport. People in general are not very intelligent, and due to their ignorance, they are most attached to the fruitive activities recommended in the karma kanda portions of the Vedas. They do not want anything more than sense gratificatory proposals for enjoying life in heaven, where wine and women are available and material opulence is very common. In the Vedas, many sacrifices are recommended for elevation to the heavenly planets, especially the Jyotishtoma sacrifices. In fact, it is stated that anyone desiring elevation to heavenly planets must perform these sacrifices, and men with a poor fund of knowledge think that this is the whole purpose of the Vedic wisdom. It is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. As fools are attached to flowers of poisonous trees without knowing the results of such attractions, unenlightened men are similarly attracted by such heavenly opulence and the sense enjoyment thereof. In the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas it is said,
Apama somam amrita abhuma
and akshayam hivai chatumasya yajinaha sukatam bhavati. In other words, those who perform the four-month penances become eligible to drink the somaras beverages to become immortal and happy forever. Even on this earth, some are very eager to have somaras to become strong and fit to enjoy sense gratifications. Such persons have no faith in liberation from material bondage, and they are very much attached to the pompous ceremonies of Vedic sacrifices. They are generally sensual, and they do not want anything other than the heavenly pleasures of life. It is understood that there are gardens called Nandanakanana, in which there is good opportunity for association with angelic, beautiful women, and having a profuse supply of somaras wine. Such bodily happiness is certainly sensual. Therefore, there are those who are purely attached to such material temporary happiness as lords of the material world. Text 44.
Bhogaishraya prasaktanam daya parita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho navadhiyate.
In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Purport. Samadhi means fixed mind. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, Samyag adhiyate smin atmatattva yatapyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyment, nor for those who are bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. Text 45.
Draiguna vishaya veda nistraigunyo mbhavarjuna nirdvandho nitya sattvastho niyoga kshema atmavan.
The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. Purport. All material activities involve actions and reactions in the three modes of material nature. They are meant for fruitive results which cause bondage in the material world. The Vedas deal mostly with fruitive activities to gradually elevate the general public from the field of sense gratification to a position on the transcendental plane. Arjuna, as a student and friend of Lord Krishna, is advised to raise himself to the transcendental position of Vedanta philosophy, where, in the beginning, there is Brahma Jigyasa, or questions on the supreme transcendence. All the living entities who are in the material world are struggling very hard for existence. For them, the Lord, after creation of the material world, gave the Vedic wisdom advising how to live and get rid of the material entanglement. When the activities for sense gratification, namely the Karma Kanda chapter, are finished, then the chance for spiritual realization is offered in the form of the Upanishads, which are part of different Vedas, as the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the fifth Veda, namely the Mahabharata. The Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. As long as the material body exists, there are actions and reactions in the material modes. One has to learn tolerance in the face of dualities such as happiness and distress, or cold and warmth, and by tolerating such dualities become free from anxieties regarding gain and loss. This transcendental position is achieved in full Krishna consciousness when one is fully dependent on the goodwill of Krishna. Text 46.
Yavanart udapanehi sarvatak samprutodake davan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanatah.
All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Purport. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karma Kanda division of the Vedic literature are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna, the primeval cause of everything. So, self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with Him. The relationship of the living entities with Krishna is also mentioned in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 15:7. The living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfectional stage of Vedic knowledge. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33-7 as follows.
Aho bata shapachoto gariyan yajjigna grivartate namatubhyam de pustaposte juhubu sasnuraya brahmanuchu namagunanti yeti.
O my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like that of a chandala or dog eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studied the Vedic literatures many, many times after taking his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. So one must be intelligent enough to understand the purpose of the Vedas, without being attached to the rituals only, and must not desire to be elevated to the heavenly kingdoms for a better quality of sense gratification. It is not possible for the common man in this age to follow all the rules and regulations of the Vedic rituals, nor is it possible to study all of the Vedanta and the Upanishads thoroughly. It requires much time, energy, knowledge, and resources to execute the purposes of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of the Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by a great Vedic scholar, Prakashananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master had found him to be a great fool, and thus asked him to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. He did so, and became ecstatic like a madman. In this age of Kali, most of the population is foolish and not adequately educated to understand Vedanta philosophy. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensively chanting the holy name of the Lord. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. Text 47.
Karmanyevadikarastihi mapaleshu kadachana makarmapalahetubhu mate sangostra karmani.
You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Purport. There are three considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. Prescribed duties are activities enjoined in terms of one's acquired modes of material nature. Capricious work means actions without the sanction of authority, and inaction means not performing one's prescribed duties. The Lord advised that Arjuna not be inactive, but that he perform his prescribed duty without being attached to the result. One who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. Thus he is the enjoyer or sufferer of the result of such actions. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. Routine work performed as an obligation in terms of the scriptural injunctions without desire for results is action in the mode of goodness. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage, Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty, without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. Text 48. Yoga-stakura-karmani-hi-sangam-takva-dhanandaya-sidhya-sidhyo-samabhutva-samatvam-yoga-ucchate. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Purport. Krishna tells Arjuna that he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the ever-disturbing senses. And who is the Supreme? The Supreme is the Lord. And because he himself is telling Arjuna to fight, Arjuna has nothing to do with the results of the fight. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. One has to become the servant of Krishna, or the servant of the servant of Krishna. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. Arjuna is a Kshatriya, and as such, he is participating in the Varnashram Dharma institution. It is said in the Vishnu Purana that in the Varnashram Dharma, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. No one should satisfy himself, as is the rule in the material world, but one should satisfy Krishna. So, unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him. Text 49. Dure na yavadam karma buddhi yoga dhanandaya buddhaushalam vichcha kripana palahetavah. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Purport. One who has actually come to understand one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of the Lord gives up all engagements save working in Krishna consciousness. As already explained, buddhi yoga means transcendental loving service to the Lord. Such devotional service is the right course of action for the living entity. Only misers desire to enjoy the fruit of their own work just to be further entangled in material bondage. Except for work in Krishna consciousness, all activities are abominable because they continually bind the worker to the cycle of birth and death. One should therefore never desire to be the cause of work. Everything should be done in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of Krishna. Misers do not know how to utilize the assets of riches which they acquire by good fortune or by hard labor. One should spend all energies working in Krishna consciousness, and that will make one's life successful. Like misers, unfortunate persons do not employ their human energy in the service of the Lord. Text 50. Buddhi yukto jahati ha ubhe sukata duskriti dasmad yoga hi yujyasva yoga karma sukaushalam. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions even in this life. Therefore strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. Purport. Since time immemorial, each living entity has accumulated the various reactions of his good and bad work. As such, he is continuously ignorant of his real constitutional position. One's ignorance can be removed by the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, which teaches one to surrender unto Lord Sri Krishna in all respects and become liberated from the chained victimization of action and reaction, birth after birth. Arjuna is therefore advised to act in Krishna consciousness, the purifying process of resultant action. Text 51.
Karmajam buddhi yuktahi phalam chakva manishinaha janma bandha vinimukta bhadam gacchan janamayam.
By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain a state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. Purport. The liberated living entities belong to that place where there are no material miseries. The Bhagavatam 10.14.58 says,
Samashita ye padapallavaplavam mahatpadam punyasho madari bhavambudhi vatsapadam parampadam padam padam yandipadangatesham.
For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Mukunda, or the giver of mukti, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a cat's footprint. Parampadam, or the place where there are no material miseries, or Vaikuntha, is his goal, not the place where there is danger in every step of life.